Hello, my name is Wayne Jones. Welcome to 3 More Minutes About Sam. This week's episode is called Sam and Home, and it's inspired by a couple of things that happened this week. I want to talk a little bit about those things. I want to read from part of an essay that Johnson wrote in 1750, and I want to comment on that essay as well, and they're all kind of interrelated, as you'll see. So just to talk about what happened during the week, there were two related things, and coincidentally, they all ended up having to refer to a single essay that Johnson wrote in 1750. The first thing that happened was that I visited some friends and who were new to the neighborhood. Basically, I live in a condo complex, and they got a condo that's about 2 or 3 minutes across the parking lot. So I went over and brought some champagne and brought some cookies, and we had a great afternoon. And I also brought them a card. I made a series of cards related to Sam Johnson that I designed a couple of years ago now. And by design, I mean that I chose the quotations from Johnson, but I used artwork of various kinds, drawings, paintings, photographs from various artists, from various friends of mine, and from some family members, including my very young niece. And I produced a series of cards out of those. And actually, those cards are all freely available. If you want to go to mysamjohnson.com, you can have as many as you want as long as supplies last. What happened was that I gave the card to my friend as a welcoming, and she was paused a bit by it, because the quotation that was there, and which I'll talk about later, she wasn't quite sure whether she agreed with it. It seemed a little kind of categorical, and I made a joke that, wow, are you disagreeing with Samuel Johnson? I fully believe that one can disagree with Sam Johnson, that's no problem. But we had a nice discussion about it, and had a great afternoon, and they kept the card, we enjoyed the champagne and the cookies, and we had a good 2 or 3 hours together. The other thing that happened during the week was that there's a woman named Gretchen Rubin who about almost 10 years ago now published a book called Happier at Home. And one of the terms she uses in the subtitle of the book is, it says, read more Samuel Johnson. And that's intriguing for many reasons, because I think it's fair to say that it's very unusual in popular culture, and certainly in a New York Times best-selling book, for the subtitle to mention an author who, died 250 years ago. So this was very interesting to me. So I just contacted her from her site. She has a very simple way of contacting her. And in very short time, I heard back from her, and I had requested an interview. And to make a long story short, the interview is all set up. I'm going to be interviewing her in the middle of August by telephone. And you will hear in this podcast, I'll make a podcast afterwards, and you'll hear the results. So I'll probably play the full interview, may edit a little bits here and there to take out, little hums and haws and stuff like that. But I'll probably play the full interview with her permission, of course. So I'll talk to her about that. And what happened was that the epigraph, the little quotation at the beginning of the book that she uses for her book, which is called Happier at Home, is from the exact same essay and is frankly the exact same line that my friend was puzzling over that I met with this week. So I thought I would reread the essay and just to see about context and what it was about and that sort of thing. And so what I'm going to do during this podcast is read not the whole essay, but parts of the essay, make some comments, and especially focus on this this part of it that was puzzling to my friend, and that was important enough to a woman who was writing, an author who was writing a book about being happier at home, to be the kind of the top epigraph that she used for her book. So that's the plan. So the essay is part of the series of essays that Johnson wrote during 1750 to 1752. He wrote them twice a week, once on Tuesday and once on Saturday, and published them in folio format. That's a fairly large format. And this is one of the earlier ones. It was published on Tuesday, November 10th, 1750. And I'm just going to quote some tidbits here. And I have to say, I mean, when I just reread the essay, you know, 20 minutes ago, and I'm always like super impressed by the language. And what always strikes me is that it's extraordinarily well written. And the other thing is that in a certain sense, that's lost to a lot of people. Because the language is extremely elevated, and by that I mean that the diction is high. You know, he's not writing a sort of a blog post or a tweet or something like that, and that kind of thing. So he's writing a formal essay, and he's a highly educated man who, you know, was also, while he was writing this essay, in the process of putting together a dictionary, so he knew a few things about words. But I'm always really impressed with, even though I've used the word dense to describe his writing, which I mean in the most favorable sense possible, and the same things happens here. And the other thing I wanted to say is that this was an era, and a lot of people still feel this today. It's not really the way I look at writing. I don't look at writing, frankly, either of nonfiction essays, and certainly not of fiction, as a means of educating myself in the sense of learning lessons from it that I could apply to my life. That's not the way I treat literary fiction. That's not the way I treat fiction of any kind. That's not the way I treat film, that sort of thing. You know, with something that's nonfiction, I may want to learn from it, but definitely anything that's fiction, that's not my purpose. I'm more interested in the words and how things are put together, the aesthetics, that sort of thing. Way back in the 1750s, I think this was kind of less of a common outlook on literature. You know, you always heard about to instruct was part of things, to instruct, but to do it beautifully, and that applied to fiction as well as nonfiction. In these essays, of course, Johnson is writing, this is nonfiction that he's writing. So in a certain way, you need to cut him a little slack in the sense that, you know, the whole purpose is basically to put forward an argument and to make comments that are accurate, you know, that are his assessment of what, name whatever you want to call it, what life is about, what a specific thing is about. So in a certain sense, he's creating something that's a series of words that say X, and that's nonfiction, that is his comment on reality. And as a reader, it's very natural, even now, even for me, to say, you know, I disagree with that. But the other thing is that all in the course of it, you know, no matter what it says, I'm always amazed again at the writing. And just quickly to say, as a kind of a corollary to that, is that on the other hand, essays that have that are about something, you know, that I might, on a topic that I might be interested in, but that are extremely poorly written, I just can't get through them. You know, the writing is too much of a barrier. If the writing is, pardon my French, as they say, crappy, or, you know, basically loose, uninformed by a knowledge of the language. And I don't mean this in a hoity-toity, hyper-educated sort of way. I just mean where someone, you know, is just very sloppy about their use of the language. It doesn't matter what the essays are about. There's no way I would be able to get through it. So they both need to be, both those cylinders need to be firing. I was going to say frying, but I don't think it's a good idea if you have a car and your cylinders are frying. And but both those need to be working. You know, it has to be beautiful, if I can put it that way, aesthetic, well-chosen language, and the content also has to be pretty solid. And I may or may not agree with the content. So to get to the essay, let me make my take the first quotation from it, and I'll read. It's just a couple of sentences, and I'll read from the essay. Here goes the quote: "Nothing is to be estimated by its effect upon common eyes and common ears. A thousand miseries make silent and invisible inroads on mankind, and the heart feels innumerable throbs which never break into complaint. Perhaps, likewise, our pleasures are for the most part equally secret, and most are borne up by some private satisfaction, some internal consciousness, some latent hope, some peculiar prospect, which they never communicate, but reserve for solitary hours and clandestine meditation." So I don't really have a sense of whether that's understandable to people. Like, do you know what he's talking about when he's talking about there? But basically he's talking about, he often makes this contrast between, you know, most people live their lives in very, you know, they're not involved in battles, they're not prime ministers of countries and that sort of thing. So life is a common, you know, is a series of very small pleasures and very small miseries that, you know, that we have to endure, sort of thing. And that's the sort of thing he's getting at here, that the miseries and the pleasures are things that are important to the person while they're experiencing them and are extremely real, but in the course of the grand scheme of things are not something that's noticed, you know, or not something that's often expressed even. And I just love the way the lilt of the language there and the way it's expressed. And the other thing about Johnson, too, is that words were never loose, by which I mean that the words were extremely well chosen. You know, it wasn't, you know, one of the common things that you see in a lot of writing. I'm also an editor, for example, and one of the common things you see in a lot of writing that people do is that they don't, again, I don't want to sound grandiose, but in French and in English, we've stolen it, of course. They call it le mot juste, you know, the exact right word kind of thing. People don't, a lot of, many bad writers, frankly, don't strive for that. They just sort of, this'll do kind of thing, and they don't worry about accuracy or what the connotations are, or even if they've chosen something that means the right thing. But I can say fairly categorically that certainly in the Rambler essays and probably in 99.99% of anything he's ever written, Sam Johnson has chosen the exact word that he meant to be, and that is a word that is accurate for the circumstances in which it's So here he has a little more to say about the you know, the what regular life is like, and I'll start quoting now. "The main of life is indeed composed of small incidents and petty occurrences, of wishes for objects not remote, and grief for disappointments of no fatal consequence, of insect vexations which sting us and fly away, impertinences which buzz a while about us and are heard no more, of meteorous pleasures which dance before us and are dissipated, of compliments which glide off the soul like other music and are far forgotten by him that gave and him that received them. So there you go. This is a comment on, you know, the small lives that we all lead, kind of thing, and we bump into things or things happen to us that are, you know, small, like a fly buzzing around you, and that's gone, and then you move on to the next thing. And it's a fairly accurate description of what real life, so to speak, IRL, as they say. So we now come to the paragraph which includes the quotation that my friend was puzzling over and that the author, Gretchen, uses as the epigraph or one of the epigraphs to her book. And I'll read the entire paragraph, and the last sentence of the paragraph is the troublesome sentence. So I'll start quoting now. "The great end of prudence is to give cheerfulness to those hours which splendor cannot gild and acclamation cannot exhilarate. Those soft intervals of unbended amusement in which a man shrinks to his natural dimensions and throws aside the ornaments or disguises which he feels in privacy to be useless encumbrances and to lose all effect when they become familiar." And here's the sentence. "To be happy at home is the ultimate result of all ambition, the end to which every enterprise and every labor tends, and of which every desire prompts the prosecution." So the image there, again, it's back in the 18th century, and he's using man. He means humankind. This is a long time before inclusive language and that sort of thing. So I think he's to be forgiven for that, just as all writers in that century are. But what he's getting at is basically that the man at home, basically, the person at home, is the person as they are. They've thrown off whatever guise you need to put on to be at work, or however you need to appear to be at a house party or some fancy event that you go to. The person that you are at home, when you've thrust everything off, so to speak, is the person that you are. And then, of course, what he goes on to do in the essay, and this is a very typical way in which Johnson proceeds in his essays, is that he goes, they're not sort of symmetrical kinds of arguments. They're very linear. And in a sense, they're not arguments. They're basically, I see it as sort of like a, if I were to use an analogy, it's like, since the Olympics are going on now, it's like a baton race where he will say something and then pick up on one part of that. And then the baton will be run with that part. And then that will go a certain distance. And then the baton, which is a detail of that part, will be passed along somewhere else. So it's like something kind of narrowing down. And often what you'll find is that his essays in the whole, especially, or maybe I can say not solely, but especially in The Rambler, they often start off in a sort of general sort of way. But when you get to the end, they're often very specific, and they're often a fair distance from what they started to be. And I'm not bothered by that. I mean, there are connections. It all flows logically. It's not as if, which would be horrific and which you do see in bad writing, where it's just a mishmash of things, you know, someone slopping something onto the page and then connecting it here and not connecting it here, and just some thought comes to them and, you know, they think that, free association like that ends up being something that's a great thing just because it's from a supposed imaginative mind. But you need to put these things together. You know, things need to flow. Otherwise, the reader is confused, or there's a lot of pretentiousness on the part of the artist or the writer who thinks they can operate like that. You know, because they're a genius, and that's okay. I'm not quite sure why I'm thinking of Kanye West right now, but I'll leave it there. And so Sam continues from that, and this is the last passage that I'll read, and then it's continuing from this thing. If you imagine the man who's sort of relaxed at home and has his various guises removed, this is the last comment, or this is the last one I'm going to talk about. It's not the end of the essay, but this follows from that, and I'll start the quote now. If a man carries virtue with him into his private apartments and takes no advantage of unlimited power or probable secrecy, if we trace him through the round of his time and find that his character, with those allowances which mortal frailty must always want, is uniform and regular, we have all the evidence of his sincerity that one man can have with regard to another. And indeed, as hypocrisy cannot be its own reward, we may, without hesitation, determine that his heart is pure. So there you go. And you often hear, for example, maybe two comments I would make. You often hear that if people are the same, if they treat you the same, no matter whether you're just sitting on a park bench with them or you're in an important meeting with them or something like that, and they treat you exactly the same, that is a person, you know, I would consider of considerable integrity. Yet, if you have another person who treats you one way when they know other people are looking, for example, and they are an asshole in other regards when they're dealing with you, or they ignore you, or because you're of no use to them outside the the work or the consultancy or the whatever it might be, and they ignore you, that is not a person who has integrity, and that is not a person who has a pure heart. So the people that treat you the same, no matter what the circumstances, are the people of what I would call high integrity and what Sam calls having a pure heart. So I think I'll leave it there with this essay. If you wanted to read the whole thing, you don't need to have a collection. You don't need to have any of Johnson's works. It's all freely available in various forms on the internet. So if you just Googled Rambler, Samuel Johnson, number 68, that sort of thing, you'll end up finding it quite easily, the full text, no problem. And the essays range, they're in the sort of the, it depends, they range from 1,000, 1,500 words, that sort of thing. So, again, I appreciate you listening to this podcast. It's called 3 More Minutes About Sam. You can subscribe to it wherever you get podcasts. And I look forward to talking to you again next week. Thanks very much for listening.